It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to The Athletic Mind, your go-to podcast for maximizing your mental game. I'm your host, Taylor Cook, a mental performance coach and a former professional hockey goalie. Join me for open conversations about mental health, mindset, and performance. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Athletic Mind. I'm your host, Taylor Cook. And today I'm really excited to share that I have a special guest joining the podcast with whom I first met a year and a half ago, initially to get her to join the podcast and share her story. And it ended up turning into something much, much more beautiful in terms of a coaching relationship and helping her achieve some really amazing goals. But before we get into today's episode, I'm going to quickly run through our usual pre-game warm-up. So for those of you who have not yet left a rating or review of the podcast, please, please, please press pause and go take a look and do that now. This really helps the podcast grow, reach new people just like yourself, or if you maybe don't want to leave a rating and review, share it with an athlete or a coach that you love that you think could really benefit from this type of information. Second, if you haven't already followed along on social media, you can do so by going down to the show notes below, or you can search me on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram at TaylorBCook_. And last but certainly not least, if you are a coach or an athlete and you're looking to elevate your game and tap into this new level of performance, then I highly recommend that you go and check out my website, www.tailored-minds.com, to learn more about how mental performance coaching can increase your in-game performance and your overall happiness in life. So, all of that being said, let's get into the interview with Kathy Andrade. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode 77 of the Athletic Mind podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Cook, and I have a very special guest coming in on the very last Monday of April, and really excited for this conversation because this whole relationship first started out with a very small email about the potential for her to come on the show almost a year and a half ago now. And turned into so much more than just a podcast guest, but also a very great coaching relationship and, you know, getting to be part of a much bigger and more exciting journey as well. So I'm very pleased to have Kathy Andre join the show today. How are you doing, Kathy?
Doing great. And it has been a long time in the making here. So looking forward to having great conversation today about the journey that we've also had together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that as well. And for anybody who might not already be familiar with some of the work that you have been doing for the past 40 years, I think it would be great to hear a little bit more about first your current profession as a professional skating coach, but also your background in sport too, which might not get talked about as much because it's not hockey, surprisingly. So you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, I would love to. So I'm originally from Calgary. So started skating in the backyard and at the community center at the end of the street and was a figure skater. So skated after school, for school, sometimes during school. But spent my younger years in figure skates, ultimately was able to achieve gold figure, gold dance, gold freestyle. And I wasn't uber talented, so I had to work pretty hard. And I think that that served me well because my coach would teach me different ways to teach something to somebody. She knew I wanted to be a coach, and she helped me work through a lot of things that I had to do in order to accomplish what I did. So 1984, I turned pro young. I was 17, which was pretty young, going to conferences and getting certifications. So I was kind of flung into a coaching position at a young age. From there, flash forward a little bit, I skated in the ceremonies, 88 Olympics in Calgary, and it was a great fun time in Calgary, won the cup in 89. Also met my husband to be at the time, and that's what brought me to California. So I moved in 92, ironically, the time when the Sharks came, and I was handed a pair of hockey skates because I was from Canada. I must know how to how to do this. So my first hockey school I coached was early 90s, and that was pretty nerve-wracking because I found out they're flying in the whole coaching staff from the East Coast. And I remember going in week before and saying, "You don't need a power skating coach. You guys know what you're doing." And so gentleman at the time, Ron Glass, who I worked for 12 years at a small community rink, he's like, "Kathy, you're doing it." Lo and behold, circling back in my career, which I guess we'll get to, because from there I moved to Sharks Ice in 2004. So I've been at my current facility for 20 years. During that time, Joe Pavelski hired me in 2009, and it was the first pro that had hired me in the off season. And I walked back into that manager's office and said, "Remember when I tried to give you those hockey skates back?" I said, "I appreciated you kind of forcing me to do it and learn, because, here I am, flash forward." And then my career was, established, and what I did moved on from there. 2018, I was asked by a group of men to start an off-ice training facility, and they brought me in to work with a skating treadmill, which I had never done. And then they had all disappeared, so I was left with a skating treadmill and the idea. And with that, we formed Extra Hour, which is now one of its kind, housing the only skating treadmill in Northern California. So we opened that in 2018. 2022 established a year-round power skating program after establishing Power Hour in 1998. And then we just opened our second facility in 2023. So long story, but that's how it all started.
But lots of really important points, I think, is what we're trying to get at, right? And I one of the first things that really stood out to me was what you said, like, I didn't feel like I was a very talented athlete, but I worked hard. And as a performance coach myself, I have a really hard time when I hear like a coach praising players saying that they're talented, purely because if a player knows that they're talented, a lot of the times they're going to be more inclined to not work as hard because they feel like they don't need to because they have the talent there. And then long term, that can actually stunt the development and the potential that they could have if they were putting in that same amount of effort as, say, one of their, teammates who maybe is not as naturally gifted, but is constantly showing up for themselves, showing up for their team, and putting in the reps and doing the work to be able to develop that skill and over time master it. So the importance that you maybe not intentionally placed on like not being particularly talented, let's say, I still think kind of shows a lot about your character as well, not only in figure skating, because you did have a lot of really great accolades in figure skating before jumping over to the pro hockey skating area. And now we see it in how everything's playing out with your business and how it's grown so rapidly over the past, what, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and that is a great point, because I see that in athletes and in players all the time. It's like, yeah, the ones that are uber, and I've been coaching so long. I mean, I've coached second generation families, and when you see those young kids that are, like you're saying, they're super, super talented, and they don't learn any work ethic as soon as things kind of get hard, then they're passed by those that have grinded and worked and put in all the extra. So yeah, I see that in my players, and you're right. I think it did serve me well to I've always put down my head and just worked hard and always just wanted to do my best. I've always wanted my work to speak for itself and try to keep out all the noise and all the exterior things that can distract us, and just believed in always giving my best to every lesson, every kid, every player. It's like connecting with them and feeling like I always wanted that time to be the best. And I think with what I do, you have to have that connection and you have to be locked into them. You can't just go through the motions of a lesson.
Absolutely. Yeah, because every player is different, right? Like maybe one player is really strong in one area and weak in another, and the player next to them is kind of the opposite. So you can't just kind of say it's like a one size fits all type of lesson. Everybody will learn the same thing at the same rate. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. And so having not only the awareness from a coach's perspective of that everybody is different, you have to really build that rapport between you and your athletes. And then, of course, to be able to see when maybe it's time to park it with one athlete and say, okay, like we actually have to go a little bit deeper on maybe this specific skill or whatever it might be, versus another athlete who's progressing very quickly, but maybe still needs to work on some more finer details of learning those specific skill sets.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Plus, what you just said earlier about the relationship part, it's like changing the way somebody strides, changing stride mechanics, or working on those details. There is a process to that relationship. First of all, I'm not going to change anything unless they feel that something needs to be changed. So that has to be number one for what I do because it's so detailed in that way. Then the relationship starts. Then it has to be like, okay, do you believe that I can help you with that? And then if that's checked off, then it's like, okay, now I have to be able to articulate it. Then kind of the process, the learning starts. And you're right. I mean, sometimes some athletes, we got to peel away a few more layers, and that's hard work. Undoing something or working through those bad habits, and that's when it gets tough. And some are just like, I'm good. Or the other scenario is if you're young and you can bank on your quickness and you're fast, it's like, why are you trying to change certain things? But then you get that phone call at 16. I used to be the on my team. What happened? It's like, well, let's see. It's like, well, do you know you're still skating like you're in a small body? So yeah, there's lots of factors that come into the rate that the lesson can go or where we're at. It's been mindset being a big part of it too.
Absolutely. I actually, because I'm a goalie, I never really think about a lot of the finer details that go into building an elite player, especially from a skating perspective. Like, I know goalies do need to learn, they need to be strong skaters just like everybody else. And I remember growing up, one of the most common things that I would hear as a goalie was like, goalies still need to be the best skaters on the ice. And I was always a little bit confused by that. But once I got a little bit older and then like doing more edge work and stuff, and honestly, in goalie gear, doing edge work is my form of torture, truly. I'm not a fan of edge work, but I do know how important it is, especially as a goalie. So, I could go down a whole rabbit hole in this specific area, but I do want to kind of drive back on track a little bit, because I don't want to not highlight some of the accolades from the figure skating era. I do think that they are worth talking about, especially like from going pro at such a young age. Like, what was that like for you? Like you said, you were thrown into conferences, but being 17 years old and turning pro, at least in women's hockey, doesn't happen right now. I mean, usually the girls are going through university and then getting into now what we have is the PWHL, but maybe that will change in the future depending on the skill level, the drafts, and how they structure everything. But what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I think, and when you turn pro, it basically means, right, you get paid to skate. So it's like, it's interesting because I think of in the golf world, there's playing pros and teaching pros, and I think the pro skating like thing kind of it's like, what does that mean? So what that meant, obviously, that was that I was like teaching. And it's funny when you just age girl, and we would get up at like 5 in the morning. We're doing school figures, and she's coming back after school, and she just did not want to be there. And I remember going, and I went up and I talked to the mom, and I'm like, "Hey, here I am. I'm trying to be like, I'm like, I don't know if she's really like interested." And the mom looked at me. She goes, "I'm paying you for a service, and the service is to keep my daughter on the ice. I don't want her hanging out after school." And I was like so taken back. I was like, "Wow!" Like I thought I was being paid to like make people like better. I was like, "Wow!" Like she wants me just to, like it was so shocking to me. Some of my first interactions. But then on the flip of it, here I was going to conventions. People were assuming I was older, and I was just like, "Wow!" Like this is an amazing career. This is awesome. So I had like this conflicting thing at first because I was trying to play this older role, and then I had people telling me that nope, they were just paying me for something and I just had to do it. So it was a little confusing at first. And then going and doing like in Canada at that time, they just started the NCCP. You had to go to school, like further education and do courses, and everybody was older and I was having trouble. The public speaking part was hard. All of a sudden, I found myself going to Dale Carnegie, and in Calgary, it was interesting because it was a public speaking human relations. So then I'm in a room with all these men in suits that are coming from work, and I was just like, "What?" Like I need some help, like getting my confidence. And they were there. It was interesting because they were there for the human relation part, and I had trouble introducing myself in, a room of like 20 suits. So there was a lot of growing going on, and a lot of challenges. Luckily, my coach at the time, Winnie Silverthorne, who I was able to work at the Calgary Winter Club with, former Olympian herself, and she coached 8-year-olds alongside of a Canadian champion, and so at that time, great mentor taught me that whether you're teaching an 8-year-old or a world champion, you're putting in the same energy, you're putting in the same work. So I was lucky. And she said, "You're not going to teach everybody to skate, Kathy, but the time you spend with them and what you can teach them is what you need to focus on." So that was a lot when I was young.
I mean, to be again, like, yeah, turning pro maybe in this context is just being paid to teach, but then to be doing public engagement, having to go to this like Dale Carnegie in Calgary. And also, were you the only female in that class?
And the youngest, and
The
the youngest.
youngest. So, okay, so the only female, youngest person in this class. And I know part of what we worked through, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, but it's like the public speaking side of things. And I'm curious if maybe that actually played a role into like what causes some of that like anxiety before doing some public speaking.
Yeah, I think I was too young to appreciate because now, since you and I have worked together and the things that I've learned along the way, I think at the time it was maybe a little bit of a band-aid because I didn't know why I had those fears. But being flung into it, I think so young was, part of it for sure. If I had done that course maybe a little bit later, I was just so. Like I think back and I don't know how much of an impact it made, to tell you the truth. Don't know if I'm answering your question,
No,
but
I was honestly just genuinely curious because I'm trying to like picture myself at 17 in that similar situation, being the youngest female, only female in a room of men in suits, then having to like stand up in front of everybody. Sounds like a very intimidating type of situation to be thrown into. And I know that if I was, younger me, like I would be very, very uncomfortable to do something like that. So, yeah, just out of curiosity, that's all. But it also kind of leads perfectly into my next question, which is, as a female in a male-dominated industry, as a business owner and operator, There's been lots of highs and lows, I'm sure, but what are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced as you've transitioned from being in a figure skating world into being in the hockey world?
I think in the late 90s, it was a lot because skating wasn't on the forefront how it is now. You'd show up at a rink and first of all, you're a woman. They know you're a former figure skater. What do you mean we're power skating? What do you mean we don't get a puck? It's like there was so many there was so many marks against you, or like there wasn't like a lot in your favor until you went on the ice and then it could see the benefit. And then it was like then a few players would hire you, and then the team would see it. So it was slow building. Where now I think, figure skaters and females are being hired. Like it's a lot easier now. Late 90s, it was hard. And I think that even when I started this facility, I've been here long enough and had enough relationships. I've built enough relationships and known players, so I was able to call in Scott Hannon and Owen Nolan and Jamie Baker, Rob Zetz. I mean, I had amazing resources and alumni players to be able to say, "Am I crazy? Like, there's pillars. Like, what do you need for a shooting lane?" So I think that was just a testament for the time I put in and the relationships that I could rely on players like that, Nabokov, and like the list kind of goes on in our area because the hockey market is so small and it was so new. It was like everybody was together and we grew together. So in that respect, because I was in the same market and I knew everybody, it was easier to get into that business because we were educating a whole market on something new. There was no synthetic ice, there was no skating treadmills. So I think my answer is going to be it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. Even though it posed a lot of challenges, educating a whole market on something new. But I think it helped that I remained in the same small market. Because if I had jumped somewhere else, had to like start all over again, I think it would have been a lot more challenging.
Yeah, I mean, speaking from my experience and like this is, just in the last few years, but living and growing up in Canada and having my entire network be in North America to then end up uprooting, moving to Europe. And yeah, okay, we've been now in Germany for the last 3 years, but I've also been in Norway, been in Austria, been in Hungary, traveling quite a bit. And so to now try to build a coaching business, of course, it's online virtual, so there is lots of opportunity, but like having the network here where I have very few connections and stuff, it can be challenging. So I would assume that it would be very similar back then as well if you were to say like move to a very different area where you don't maybe or maybe you don't have the same type of connections and maybe the market's a little bit more saturated than what it is where you were there in California. So yeah.
Like that first hockey school I did in 93, I mean, Rob Zettler was the guest shark. Roy Sommer, who's the winningest coach in the NHL, was or in the AHL, was one of the coaches. So yeah, I mean, in nine before I even knew that I was even going to do hockey, I had already met and had worked, and Rob hired me later for his Zettler pro hockey schools, and Roy I worked for many years. So yeah, you're building these relationships in early 90s, which flash forward like 30, 40 years, you can rely on them for advice or so I think the longevity of it of the career and the relationship and the work ethic along the way kind of helped solidify all those relationships.
Yeah, and I have to like give a little bit of a testament to the guys that you've been working with as well, because for them to be much more progressive and forward thinking and being much more inclusive than what was most likely going on in that industry at the time, I think is really great, first of all. Like I don't know, I was obviously not there, but for someone of, their like experience, rank, these types of things to like basically force, not force, but like force you and say like, you're doing this, like here's the skates, go and get on the ice. Like I feel like that was pretty much unheard of at that point in time in the mid-90s to like have someone say like, we're hiring this female coach and that's the end of it.
Yeah, no, you're right. Never thought of it, but yeah. And I mean, there was no resources. So where was I going? Like Laura Stam had a book, but there was no internet. There was no, like, I had like nowhere to look. So I had to tap into the skills that I had. And they had a former, they had a figure skating coach sort of doing it before. And a good and friend of mine, but you know, her advice was just like, no, scream at them, just like yell at them, just get them moving. It's like, okay, that's it's not helping me. It's not helping me
Absolutely
figure
not.
it out. Not my style. But yeah, no, you're right. What you said, I never thought of it that way. But yes, you're right.
Not your coaching style. So what is your coaching style? Just quickly before we get into some other fun stuff here.
I think we tapped on that. I think it's the relationship piece for me that just because I know what it takes to change and alter something. So I like the you have to have the connectability. If you're going to get them out of their comfort zone doing something, you know, if you're a teenage boy and you're coming and you don't know who the coach is, you kind of have to. We got to make them laugh a little bit. We have to make them, you know, give them some inspirational stories, show them a video of something that's a before and an after, or you have to figure out what makes them tick for sure. And then you got to figure out how to connect with them. Yeah. And I think my style is, I don't know. I think that is my style. I want the relationship. I can't teach somebody and I can't connect if I'm not feeling something for them, from them. I have to get it from them and then I know how to give them what they need, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it
I'm not
makes
the type
complete
that just
sense.
like runs the, I don't set up the cones, run the drills, and let's go. It's like it needs to be two-way for me. And I think that, yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I think that's super important in well, all coaching relationships, but in just relationships in general too, right? Like it's always a two-way street. And even when like I'm doing like more business networking, like it's always about like what value can I also provide to you as well, right? And I think the same is said for in my coaching practice with athletes is like having to build the rapport first, because especially young boys, it's so hard to crack that shell. Some of them are just like so like locked up tight, they don't want to open up, and it can be really hard to get into there. But once you like find your way in, that's when the whole process starts to blossom. And so I think the importance of athletes having more of an open and growth oriented mindset is really important in their own development process. And reflecting back on my journey too, I think the reason I was able to pick up and learn things so quickly is because when I finally got access to some of those resources, I was just like, I am clay, mold me, please. And that's like, I was just open to whatever was going to work. And so I find it can be really, really beneficial to talk with athletes, of course, about, do you have an open mindset, or are you kind of locked in on certain ideas? Are you a little bit more rigid? And like, how is it that you can actually work with those athletes that have a little bit of a harder time being a bit more open and growth oriented and really get in and make that connection to the point where they're like, oh, you actually do know what you're talking about. That's right. I can do this now.
The chase for the Stanley Cup is on, and if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of playoff beards all the way to the hoisting of the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/ice for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Yeah. No, I think when you get those ones, it's so rewarding, right?
Yeah. So rewarding.
When you get those ones, they're like, wow. Like I coached a player, end up getting a full ride University of Miami, but he was like a wild horse to try to break. He was a defenseman, and it's kind of when it's like crossovers were, it was that big period back then where it was like, hey, we're not using crossovers just to get going. We're using, you know, we need to be able to transition and the open hip. And he was just like he was like a wild horse to break. And interesting enough, he was interviewed after and he was like, I gave her such a bad time, you know, and then once he got it, it was like an act of God that he would do a crossover when he shouldn't have. And I think that he played hard and he was solid, and it's sad. He passed away young, but I'll always remember his spirit and just how strong he was. And then that interview, just almost laughing and smiling to himself. It's like, I gave her such a bad time. And, you know, I said, hey, that made me a better coach, because then all of a sudden you're sort of doubting yourself. Like,
yeah,
should I be teaching this technique or should I be doing this? And then I'll say to my coaches when they get like a challenging player and they'll come up to me, or even my son, who I coach with now, he's like, oh my God, I can't get him on the outside edge. I can't turn. He won't turn. He's battling me. It's like, hey, those are the moments. They don't like it when I say it, but that's what makes you a better coach. And I'll forever be grateful for those players along the way, because you have to be creative how to get in there and have to change it. But it does make you doubt sometimes. It's like, wow, like, should I really be trying to break this down and build this up? So again, learning happening on both sides of that equation.
Yeah. And I'm happy that you bring up the self-doubt topic as well, because I don't think that some of these things are really talked about enough when it comes to any sort of coaching or like business endeavors. So from your experience, like what was like a time where you had like the greatest self-doubt, where you were like questioning coaching or questioning if you were the right fit or if you should do or should not do something?
Well, that's what leads into our relationship. One of my biggest fears, I was asked to do a live presentation through the coach's site the summer of 2023, and it was going to be, you know, Yost Rink in Michigan. It was going to be in front of 600 coaches live and coaches from all over the world and peers and NHL coaches and leaders and all hockey industry. And ironically, Taylor had reached out to me at the beginning of that year to do a podcast, like she said, a year and a half ago. And when I found out what she did, I was like, I need you. I need to hire you. No, I'm not equipped to do a podcast. And I have this, this presentation that has now kind of flung me into a place of a little bit of self-doubt and unsettling experience. And so, yeah, so that's it. That's the topic and kind of where we are. And you helped me, give me tools and give me direction and help prepare me. And we expect our athletes to do it. And I didn't realize that I needed a performance coach or I needed somebody to help lead me through that. And not knowing the 40 years of coaching and experiences and just life, actually, we peeled back layers even back to just childhood and just what you learn about yourself. So that is why we're here.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to our very first interaction when I reached out, and I specifically recall you saying, like, I don't think that I really have too much to offer if I were to come on your podcast. And I'm thinking, like, what do you mean you don't have too much to offer? Oh my goodness, like your resume is looks great. You've obviously made an impact. You're with the NHLCA at that point too. So like there was lots to already talk about. And it just, I think everything happens for a reason, and it was, right place, right time for the two of us. So really happy that we connected and have gone down this wonderful path together. But thinking back to before we even then started our process together, after we had that initial conversation about the podcast, you found out that I was in the performance coaching, and I did tell you about a program that we were kind of rolling out in the upcoming month or something like this. What were some of your like initial thoughts before starting that work together? Like, were you a little bit apprehensive, unsure, second guessing things?
You mean when I was asked to present and why I thought I.
No, not from the presentation, but
Okay.
from us working together and doing that performance coaching, going through that process.
Yeah, no, that process was huge. And it re really, I knew there it was time to invest in myself, and I knew that it was overdue. Just how busy I was and just how things had grown and progressed, and just the different things that I was doing, like being part of the NHLCA and then a meeting and just interacting with so many talented people. And I was just like, oh, like, do I belong here? Like there's so many amazing talents. And yeah, just flung me into a place of doubt. And I had learned what the word or what imposter syndrome was, and highly successful. Like, it sounded like it was a weak thing. It sounded like what does that mean? And then when you start researching about famous, strong people and people we all admire go through these moments of doubt. And I just needed to be in a place of growth. I needed to be here. I was ready to embark on a second business, bringing my son back in the fold, and I had gone from just having something I was passionate about, turning it into a career, and now it being a livelihood for my family and leading the next generation of coaches. And why was I feeling that I wasn't equipped? So yeah, there were so many things that stood out from my time with you, things doing like highlight reels or statements like, I can do this because, or I can because. And then anybody, or when we all take a piece of paper and just write down why you think you can do something or what you've done in the past, it was a really great exercise. But it was really great to see it on paper and just put it in front of myself of what I had done. And I think all of us do such amazing things, but we forget because you're on to the next. And just revisiting was just really powerful. Why I was where I was and what I needed to do to be the best version of myself moving forward.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially people who are like highly successful and have achieved a lot, typically tend to undermine their own experiences because they don't see themselves as being up here but they're also looking up to other people too, right? And so it can be so easy to forget about some of the great things that you've done. And it doesn't have to be even getting an award of sorts, but just the fact that you like maybe are going through and doing the same thing every day and being consistent with things might be boring sometimes, but consistency is the key to success. And so it can be really easy again to just kind of forget about some of those things. And then when this major opportunity presents itself, for you to then start questioning absolutely everything and thinking like, am I even like equipped to handle this type of event or whatever it might be? But something as simple as reflecting back on the past accomplishments that you've had, no matter how big or small, can be the fuel in the fire that you need to be able to build that confidence up and recognize like, yeah, I've done this before and I can do it again. So happy to hear that some of those tools in particular like really resonated well for you and really brought out a quite big transformation in the long run.
It did. And I was asked to present to the NHLCA after that. And being able to tap into all those tools of preparation, just learning to embrace it. And just, you hear about breathing, you hear about visualization. We know and we hear all about it, but I actually put it into use and then saw the results. Yeah, I think I will tap in and I'll use things that I've learned through the rest of my life. Again, feeling like I'm a late bloomer. It's never too late to learn well into the 50s here. So I use a lot of the tools that I learned and highly encourage everybody, whether it's athletes, coaches, or whatever your walk of life is, to try to tap into somebody like yourself. So I'm
Yeah.
grateful for that.
Well, thank you. And I'm deeply appreciative of our relationship. And as you had kind of said about some of the more difficult athletes that you had worked with, it becomes like something that you're so proud of and it creates this emotion within you. And so me as a coach, seeing like what our starting point was and then how much you've personally and professionally grown since then and being able to do the coaches site now the NHLCA presentations, like it seems like so much positive has come out of that for you, and that like makes my heart smile. So I'm really happy to see that and to hear that this is not just stopping with you, but it's also like kind of being spread through your family too, because of course, like you and Cameron working together, that's of course going to be able an opportunity to relay some of those same things over to him to help him in his journey as well. So yeah, I'm really happy about all the work that we've done together, and it's just as rewarding for me as it is for you, which is really great.
Yeah, like even just my husband had to speak at a funeral, and my son was a best man, and so even just helping them prepare for those real life moments that we all have to do, and those things like not, I was hard on myself, is like I'm always like not thinking I'm quick on my feet, and always thinking I'm over thinking after and analyzing and even just being able to move forward and not be ruminating about things that you can't change, or like those all impact your life, what's going through your brain and the self-talk. And and you're right, I'm hoping to with my son and yeah, and just life and just relationships and friends. I've talked to friends about it. I have a lot of super successful friends, and just sharing with them, and it ended up being kind of surprising. It doesn't matter if you're in the corporate world, if you're in the sport world, it doesn't matter where you are in life. It's amazing that self-talk and how important it is.
Yeah, it's so true. A lot of, and like when I talk to athletes specifically about this, they're like, oh, well, like it's pretty good overall. I'm like, but are you actually paying attention to some of the things that you're saying to yourself like throughout the game? Like even when you make a mistake, like what's the first thing going through your head? If you miss a shot on net, what are you saying to yourself? Okay, now would you say those same things to your teammate? If no, then you also need to be changing the way that you're talking to yourself, because it's not going to be beneficial for you. It's actually going to erode your confidence and your self-esteem, and it makes it so much more difficult. So I love that you also talk about how you can use these in life as well. I mean, that's one of my biggest things that I want to leave with all of my athletes, my coaches, is yes, this is, can impact you in such a great way in the sports industry, but apply these outside of those areas too. Like, they're just as impactful, and you can uncover so many things and experience so much growth in that process. So I'm happy to hear that those things have gone to use for your husband and your son, and for, I would assume, also many more people to come in the future too. So all of
Yeah,
that then
just
being
learning the
said.
power. Yeah, and learning, sorry to interrupt there, the
No,
power of
no.
the mindset too. It's just some things that you don't think about until you kind of quiet yourself a little bit and then see what is being said to yourself. Yeah.
Yeah,
Mindset is.
absolutely. Absolutely. And as a mindset coach, of course, I'm going to say, like, get yourself a performance coach. Doesn't have to be me, but get someone, because it can be a complete game changer. But then that brings me to my last question. So, being the successful woman that you are, the wonderful track record with all that you have underway with two training facilities now, and even more to come in the future as well. But what is some advice that you would give to a younger woman that is aspiring to get into coaching themselves?
Yeah. And you know what? I think that I've always wanted, like I said earlier, my work to speak for itself. I think I would tell my younger self, which is a little bit different than the question you asked, to embrace technology sooner. But I would tell my younger, or tell a younger coach to, yeah, work hard. And obviously, we always want to be the best version of ourselves and not get caught up in all of the outside pressures that you might be feeling. Like, do your work, do it for the right reasons, and give your work a voice. Don't assume that others are going to. And I think just doing that just in an appropriate, confident way. There's nothing wrong with that. Where there again, men and women can be perceived differently when they're talking about what they'd like to do or what they've done or what they're asking for. And so I think just being as authentic and being as honest as you can, and just work hard.
There's a lot there, and like the message to your younger self is also important to anybody who wants to become a coach as well, because those are things that you wish that you may maybe known sooner and thought about sooner, and could have maybe impacted your career path in a different way. You never really know, of course. But I mean, I say the same thing for certain areas of my playing career. Like, I wish I had access to some of these things sooner, or I wish I had known some of these things before, because it would have changed a lot of things. And it's kind of the classic, if I knew then what I know now, things would be different, right? But I still think that there's so much value that comes from, like, what you would say to your younger self, because a lot of people can learn from that. So it's worth sharing.
Yeah, and we can all look back and say, oh, would I have done this differently? Yeah, maybe would I have done that differently? But I think we all have to remember that that was part of our process, our part of, yeah, part of our process and our life and our journey. And everybody's is the same. And we look at somebody and we assume that they're in a certain place, but it's not like they've been unscathed by life. And it's the old, right? You haven't walked in anyone else's shoes, so it's hard to criticize anybody for what they would have done. So I think that's part of what I mean when I say just focus on you and what you're doing, and helping, obviously uplifting those along the way. So
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not agree more. Well said. And then to close things out, just want to make sure that anybody who's listening also has an opportunity to contact you. So if you have any websites you feel like sharing here, any contact info, now would be a good time. And I can link everything in the show notes too.
Yeah, we're going through a growth process with business, which is new scheduling apps, new websites. But we do have two websites, Kathy's Power Skating and Extra Hour Training. Instagram, we also have both, Kathy's Power Skating, Extra Hour, and my son, Cam's Hockey Skating. It's a lot of great videos. Facebook, we don't do as much, but we're out there too. So yeah, look for us on Instagram. And we're pretty accessible. So send us a note if you need anything.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for taking the time. I know it's an early morning for you, but I appreciate you being here and finally, after a year and a half, getting your story on the record and being able to share it.
Oh, no, thank you. It's been an amazing journey, and it was great to be able to share a little bit of that this morning. So thank you for that.
After mine and Kathy's conversation, she was really moved and really wanted to share some extra words with the audience around some advice that she would be giving to those who are looking to get into coaching. So here is another quick message from Kathy.
Hey, Taylor, Kathy, Andrade. Thank you again for inviting me on your podcast. It certainly sparked lots of great memories, made me think back over the last four decades of what's transpired, and I loved the conversation that we had. I did want to add a little bit to the last question you asked me about advice to a younger woman coach in a male-dominated sport. And you know what? I just wanted to share and really, really convey not to be scared to fail and to pivot. I reinvented myself quite a few times, and I think that that's something that you want to make sure that you're open to. Always being authentic and push hard and follow your instincts, since we as women have great instincts, and that's a definite benefit. So thank you again, and good luck to everybody, and hope to cross paths with some of you soon.